Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, here with your editor and publisher, Kevin Longquist. And Kevin, Baylor is, we're recording this before the Oklahoma game, so but Baylor's sitting squarely in the middle of the pack, and they're tied with, what, three or four other teams right now? I mean, it's a really tight race right now.
It's crazy because Kansas just beat Texas and just knocked Texas out of sole possession of first place in the Big 12. That was on Big Monday. So think about this, Stephen. Your Big 12 leader right now, leaders, plural, have three losses. And it would not surprise me that if the number one seed, I think we're looking more or less like I think we're going to have maybe two teams, possibly three, share the regular season championship. And those teams realistically could have five losses, maybe six. And that just shows you how that the craziness, the depth of this league, the unmercifulness of this. I mean, look at Kansas real quick. They go to Iowa State last Saturday and they get smoked. They come home and beat Texas. Texas just won at Kansas State before it went to Lawrence and got beat by the Jayhawks. Then you go back to Baylor, where tough road loss at Texas. They come back, they get Jonathan Chamo Chacho back. We'll talk about him in a second. They get him back, they run away from Tech. And for all of the people who thought that maybe there wasn't a bottom in the Big 12, yeah, I kind of think your bottom is really Tech and Oklahoma at this point. And they should be able to, and as we're recording this prior to the game, I'd be shocked if the Bears really had an issue with the Sooners, given how much the Sooners struggled to score.
Yeah, but, you know, Kevin, it's anybody in this league can sneak up and bite you in the rear end.
True. I mean, and the quick examples of that were Tech rallying from 23 to beat Iowa State a week and a half ago. And then, of course, even though it was out of conference, you have Oklahoma blowing the doors off of what was then number two Alabama in the Big 12 SEC Challenge. But the way I look at the Sooners, or at least the bottom two teams in the conference, is that there's a reason why they've gotten into this rut. And the wear and tear of a season, when teams are losing these games consistently, it wears on you mentally, so that perhaps the bottom drops out during the regular season. Maybe they get a slight surge when they get to the conference tournament. But you know what I'm saying? It just kind of starts to lean on you. But for the teams that are still actively engaged in the race for the conference title, which obviously includes Baylor, you know, it keeps you on your toes, and your energy is high and your focus is high. So the caliber of play should be high every game, you know, starting with Oklahoma, and then the Bears have got to go to TCU on Saturday.
Yeah, now they do have Kansas is like a half game ahead of them, but the other real challenge for Baylor is entering into the second half of this season. Everybody that's ahead of them also has the tiebreaker on them in head-to-head, except right. For the Jayhawks. So right. They've got to, you know, they've got to take these, and that's going to be beating Kansas State on the road, you know, which is not easy. And then also TCU is just a half game behind them, and they're going to have to beat TCU on the road, or they need to.
Yeah, well, the other thing, you know, so this is why we're beating Tech and Oklahoma are big, because you've got to take care of business against those second division teams in the conference to obviously keep yourself in the race. You can't have any bad. We're getting to the point of the season where bad losses start to show up a lot more. Not so much for Baylor's case in terms of making the tournament, the NCAA tournament, that is, but just for seeding and that sort of thing. But you're right. You know, after this Oklahoma game, three of the next four are on the road. They're at TCU on Saturday. They're home Big Monday for West Virginia. And then they've got the Kansas swing the following week to go to Kansas State and Kansas. And that's going to, Kansas is on a Saturday, Kansas State's on a Tuesday. So this is going to be, I think that this stretch starting with TCU is going to be kind of telling about where Baylor is in terms of trying to challenge for a third consecutive Big 12 championship.
Yeah. Now, you had mentioned Everyday John coming back, and the genuine fan excitement. You know, there's creative yes. hype and there's real hype.
Yes.
But you remember when Tristan Clark was out for a year? Mm-hmm. And he came back and everybody was like, yeah, you know, I mean, look, they were happy he was back. But they weren't like they were when John came back.
Yeah, I think, you know, with Clark and John, obviously, the same thing, too, or same type of injury, knee injury. And I think you could argue that every day John's injury was worse than Tristan's. But just Tristan's issue was that he just never could get past it because, you know, the cartilage issue, the support, that sort of thing. But John's injury, obviously worse because he tore multiple ligaments. There was nerve damage in there. And, you know, I thought that, and I did think, I think I said in the preview way back in November was, if they get him back, they're probably going to get him back in February, a little earlier than I thought when he showed up against Tech last Saturday. But having said that, you know, it was a perfect place to play him. Game turned into a blowout. And the unbridled enthusiasm when it broke, like moments before tip-off, that he was going to play in this game. And then when he makes his first appearance with about 13 minutes to go in the first half, I mean, the Farrell Center was just a different environment. I think Tech felt like, oh, man, we're screwed. And then when he knocks down his first three-point attempt, then the roof just comes off the Farrell Center. And it was as perfect a way for him to get into it. I thought he played more minutes than I thought he was going to play. That was 13. And I think the way that Baylor is going to just kind of continue to work about this, and Scott Drew talked about this at his presser on Tuesday, was got to continue to just gradually add more minutes to his log, see how well he can get into game shape and stay in game shape for what we need for the final push of the season. Because, you know, they're basically about to start the fourth quarter of the season, if you will. And I think John's presence changes Baylor from, you know, they're still primarily a jump shooting team with their guards, of course. And, you know, Keontae George is just that cutting edge type of player who can take over something in the last 5 minutes if you need him to. But I think what everyday John does, he creates a little bit more balance to where more teams are going to have to account for Baylor in the post between him, Flo Thamba, and of course, you know, Ojuana. That's going to be him. He's continuing to develop. Then you have Jalen Bridges, who's more of a shooter, but he is your three, so he can slash, you know, that sort of thing. I just think he changes how this team looks. And if more teams have to account for, you know, John in the post being effective, I think that's going to be important. Now, the key for watching John is, while the adrenaline was great on Saturday, it's going to be more of a question of how does it sustain itself over these next couple of games. That's going to be the thing to watch, to see how he handles this and how he can play through it, because there's still going to be some fatigue issues he's going to have to endure.
In that first game, he did not play tentatively when he was on the field, and I thought that was one of the big things, because whenever you have that knee injury, it's as much mental coming back from it as it is physical.
For sure, yeah.
And he just didn't seem tentative at all. And one of the things, and I talked about the intangibles and raising the enthusiasm, but the other thing about that with him is that you know, he scrambles for the loose balls and really goes after them. And I think that is infectious with the team.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I think that other players scramble more for the ball when they see him doing it.
That's that Mark Vital effect that you talked about a few weeks ago, saying Baylor was kind of missing that. And the fact that someone wasn't really willing to do all the dirty stuff. And here's John scrambling after loose balls, and he just came off a catastrophic knee injury, and he's going out there just playing, if you will, fearless, saying, look, I've done my work, I'm ready to go, and I want to play. And his faith playing a big role in this too, in his return, and just, and of course his work ethic to get himself to this point, I think is incredibly inspiring, and teams will feed off of that. And you could just see that when Baylor, you know, when Tech when Baylor went on that 16-4 run in the early part of the second half, and John hit a shot, and you know Jalen Bridges hit a couple of threes, that the place was just electric, and Tech had no chance. You know, they, if they felt bad about this enough when John entered the game in the first half, it was over when it got to a 12-point lead for Baylor. You could just see it.
Yeah, and the Ferrell Center is not normally noted as being a tough place to play. One of the reasons that they wanted to get that new arena was to create the higher stands and get more crowd noise.
Yes,
You couldn't hear in the Ferrell Center, and right. That's pretty amazing.
It is pretty amazing, and it was, like I said, a fun atmosphere. And, you know, the way they bounced back from Texas is the way you would hope that a team of this kind of caliber would do that. And I think, you know, and to be honest with you, too, L.J. Cryer did not have a really big impact on that game. But that's okay. It's a case where if somebody else steps up. But I think this team, though, like I said before, this road trip starting with TCU and then the other two road games doing the Kansas swing really going to tell us where this team is in terms of trying to compete for the Big 12 championship and if they can get into that, if they can assert themselves, if you will, as the contender, or if they're going to be mixed in this. I personally think if they find a way to go 2-3 in this stretch, and keep in mind TCU's got Mike Miles, at least he hasn't played the last few games because of that hyperextension knee injury that he suffered at Mississippi State, and that's TCU's best player. That's a different team without him. And they look at two. They've lost like 3 out of their last 4. But if they find a way to get 2 out of 3 in this stretch, that's really good.
I still think they could compete for a number 1 seed in the tournament, but they've got to close really strong to do that. I mean, they'll make the tournament, but they've got to close really strong if they want to be in the top half of the brackets.
Yeah, I think the latest projections have them as a 4. And, of course, those bracketology things are basically coming out fast and furious, like every other day or something like that. So, you know, that seed can change. I'd be more interested to see how the bracketology will work once we get to the first week of March, you know, when they get to that last regular season home, you know, the last game in February, then the finale in March, that first Saturday in March. I think Baylor closes with Iowa State. And then kind of see, I think Baylor's last 2 games are, I think they go to Oklahoma State on Big Monday, the 27th, and then they have Iowa State at home at the Ferrell Center to close it. But right about there, that seed, barring whatever happens in the Big 12 tournament, that would probably give you a better sense as to what their seed is looking like, depending on how the games prior to those 2 games will go.
All right. Let's talk about the NFL Combines coming up. And Connor Galvin and Siaki Ika are both going to the Combine. I actually think Galvin would have had better ratings if he'd come out last year. Ika, I did not think his senior year was particularly impressive. But what are your thoughts on it?
Well, for starters, I think that's the right size number of guys from this team going to the Combine. That Baylor got 2 was great. And those were probably the 2 that you were expecting. You know, Galvin, you're right. Now, Connor's season, he got off to a horrible start. There's no question about that. He was pretty bad at the beginning of the year, but then he picked it up and he was much better toward the end of the season. So that kind of played into it. And of course, he was at the Senior Bowl in Mobile last week. And, you know, the one thing about the Senior Bowl or all those bowl games, it's not so much the games, it's just the way they practice, because that's what really the NFL executives really want to see, is where their work ethic is. It's like, you know, if you have a great game, that's fine. But they want to see how your work habits are developing, what your skill level is like during those workouts leading up to the game. They're going to put more stock in that. The game is just kind of a celebration of the week-long efforts that you put in. And I think Connor, for his part, did enough to warrant that. Now, I think from his standpoint, he's going to have to obviously try and get a little bit stronger. And so with Connor, I still think he's probably going to be a third-round draft choice, or third-day draft choice, I should say. So that's going to be rounds 4 through 7. But he did enough so that he could probably put himself in position to where he can get drafted. And so, you know, I'm happy for him because, you know, he was the Big 12 Offensive Lineman of the Year during the 2021 championship season. And then again, you have what, you know, then you go to Apu Ika. And, you know, Apu's season, I would agree with you, didn't go very well. Thought he was, you know, somewhat inefficient. And I think, but he has that kind of size and he has that kind of presence so that he can just plug holes. He's just got to be able to be a little bit more nimble. And I think that's one thing. I would suspect that whatever feedback that he's gotten from NFL organizations, they've told him, you need to slim down X amount, and here's what we need to see from you leading up to the combine, which is going to be February 28th through March 6th at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, where it's always been. And it's going to be up to him to really help himself. This is, I think, you know, Connor can't hurt himself in this combine, I don't think. But I think Apu really needs to help himself in the combine with what he does, how he runs, just on all the skills that they're going to put him through, because they want to see that agility firsthand to see, can he be a real reliable guy to use on a defense? He won't start in the NFL. I think he's a guy that could probably be a potential solid backup somewhere, but it's up to, but it's in his hands now because he has this invite.
I think that, I think both of them got invited because of their measurables. If I was taking a guess, they both have the measurables. But I think that what, for me, what Apu's going to have to do is he's going to have to show that he's grown up. You know, the stuff out there, like, you know, dancing in between plays and just goofing around and stuff, I don't think that's going to go over well with NFL scouts.
No, and I think I'm sure that was part of the message that was sent to him was that. And then the other thing was is just making sure that, you know, again, it's more or less about his overall being in shape so that even though, you know, there are so many things about rotations now with offensive and defensive linemen that, you know, you don't need your nose tackle to be a three down type of player, but he's got to be at least pretty solid for two. And I think those are the things that Apu really has to focus in on. And, you know, the time that he spends between now and then getting up to the combine, also pretty important, because then he'll be on the stage where every single eye from every single NFL organization is going to be watching him.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a look. We wanted to kind of clean up with recruiting. Let's start out with Aaron Flowers. He's the Rivals' number 196 prospect, and he did junior days at Oklahoma and Baylor. So, four-star, what do you think?
Two-team race between the Bears and the Sooners, and I think Baylor's in a pretty good spot here. You could say this is a coin flip, really, which it is. And I think Baylor's done very, very well with him, and I absolutely think they can beat Oklahoma for him. I think it's going to come down to, you know, what does he see himself, how he sees himself influencing the secondary at Baylor versus how he can be a presence in Norman. And, of course, you know, the Sooners can always, you know, dangle the carrot saying, well, we're going to go to the SEC probably in 2025. So by the time you get to us, you know, we're going to redshirt you in 2024. And then our first season in the SEC, you know, you'll be umped up and ready to go. So that's the way they can present it to him. Now, Baylor can present itself saying, look, we have a chance to be one of the flagship programs in the Big 12. And our secondary had some issues last year. But we think you're one of the guys, minus what we have in 2023, but we think you're one of the bright spots of the future that can really be a ball hawking type of guy. And I think that's what Aaron really has to decide is, where is he going to feel like he can make the most impact with either one of those schools? You know, I think I would give Baylor the slight edge over the Sooners. This is tight, but I think Baylor has the edge right now. But things can change, as we all know, with recruiting.
Oh, yes. We found that out relatively.
With Austin Novus?
Yeah. And TCU's finding that out. I'm going to post on that thread on the site that picture of Spider-Man, four Spider-Men all pointing at each other? Because if you're going to start kidding people about flipping, that's just the way of the world right now.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, now, we also, before we got out, Baylor just offered Deuce Adams out of New Braunfels, Texas, pro-style quarterback, 6'2", 175. His offer list isn't outrageous. You know, he's got Washington State, and other than that, everybody's G5 or so, and Baylor. So what are your thoughts on Adams?
Well, you know, Baylor's been talking to him since the fall, since about October. It's a good relationship. They hadn't offered him until he came up to the junior day on January 29th, and then a couple of days afterwards, the Bears offered him. And I think he understands, you know, how this process works. And I think the reason why Baylor was holding out from offering him was because it wanted to see where it was going to go with Walker White, the Rivals, you know, 250 quarterback out of Little Rock, because White was down to the Bears, Clemson, and Auburn, and he wound up committing to Auburn last Friday. And so now the Bears kind of have to start all over with their quarterback situation there. You know, Baylor's 2024 quarterback options kind of fell apart on them, so now they have to go to round two on this, and this is where a guy like Deuce comes into play, a guy like Haas Haney from Aledo they recently offered. Haas has been committed to Duke for about a week and a half now, but you know how this game goes. As soon as somebody, as soon as he commits somewhere to a G5 or to a P5 school, everybody else jumps in and offers, which is just, that's one of the most bizarre things about recruiting is, you know, it's kind of like I look at Haney's, and the reason why Haney wasn't being offered by P5 schools is he's not tall enough, per se. I mean, I've watched Haas, you know, obviously, for the last 2 years at Aledo, when he was the start, and especially when he was the starting quarterback during the state championship season. Haas is not 6 foot. He's about 5'11", okay? And that's why a lot of P5 schools were like, I'm not sure. I don't want to do it. I'm not sure. I can't, you know, and it's this game of chicken. And then it's almost like somebody, I think you used this example a few years ago about this type of recruiting, is that it's like a junior high dance. You got the boys on one wall, you got the girls on one, on another wall, and they're all just staring at each other. And no one wants to make the first move to be the first ones on the dance floor. And then as soon as somebody else, until somebody summons the courage to do it, then everybody else jumps in. And that's exactly what happened with Haney. I mean, Duke was the one, P5 school, of course, out of the ACC, is the one that offers, pushes, says, we want you at quarterback, not wide receiver, which is what other schools were viewing Haas as. And as soon as they told him this, he commits them, and then everybody realizes, well, our first options at quarterback aren't there anymore, so we got to come in on him. And so that's how this whole racket works.
It is, and you end up with 80% of the teams chasing 20% of the quarterbacks. And
yes,
once that 20% is taken, then the second round breaks up. And, you know, and I mean, hey, look, the players are doing the same thing on the other side.
Oh, yeah.
But
for
you
sure,
just have to, you know, at a certain point in time, you just have to say, hey, you know what? I'm not getting, you know, one of the Manning kids to show up this year, so let's, you know, see if we can get somebody that's like Trent Dilfer's grandson.
Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of, it's to the point where you just sit back, if you watch this for as long as I have, you just go, really, we're doing this? You know, again, their two of their targets were, you know, Trey Owens, you know, Trey, great-looking quarterback, too. Trey's a great kid, by the way. You know, from Cy Fair, and Baylor really liked him, and he wound up committing to Texas. And then you have, of course, you know, Marcus Davila out in Midland. He committed to TCU. Well, those are gone. Then you go for Walker White. Now he's gone. So now you have to go to your second tier for the Bears, and that's just kind of the reality of it. And so, but I think with Deuce Adams, but just getting back to Deuce Adams, big kid. I'll have a little bit more about him coming up. But he's a good sized kid, can make all the throws. And the fact that Baylor had been talking to him since the fall is a good sign. I think, again, it's just a matter of, I think they want to see him more. They probably want to, I think before they really push, my suspicion is that, because I don't think given his offer list, Deuce is in any hurry to commit to anyone just yet. So Baylor knows it probably has a little bit of time on his hands, but now is about building the relationship. And I think watching him during spring football in May down there in New Braunfels, it will be important for them to how much do they really want to push on him to see if they can get him to commit, if that's their first choice.
All right. You want to close it out for us?
Sure. So we'll have coverage of the game on Saturday at TCU because obviously we're recording this before Oklahoma, but of course there will be coverage from the Oklahoma game. We'll keep you going as well as far as the portal profiles are coming up. Still got two more to go. That's with Keetron Jackson as well as Sawyer Robertson. So those are the last two in the series, which will probably wrap up next week. And of course, we'll keep tracking Baylor's basketball season. Again, TCU next Saturday, Big Monday against West Virginia. And then we will talk to you all next week on the Sikkim Sportscast.